You're just gonna have to keep that motor of yours running for another half an hour.
Hello, this is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 22, A Christine Runs Through It. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Whoops, I just, damn it.
Just leave it.
No, I don't want to do that. No.
Okay, fine.
No. In the era before you started relentlessly making fun of the other podcast for making mistakes, maybe, but now I...
Okay, fine.
Haha, double down, still recording, fooled ya. Okay, nobody guessed that. All right, I'll do it for real.
I got it.
Once you get to the end of the show and you come back, you might understand why I'm laughing right now. All right, anyways, this is episode 6. Nope, season 6, episode 22. Oh boy, here we go. Season 6, episode 22. Christine Runs Through It.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi, everybody. Especially Dave. All right, let's get into this. Before we do, though, we want to tell you what's happening on the Patreon. Episode 145 is coming up May 26th. Let's watch Rob Estes in his Suddenly Susan debut. Did you know there were 4 seasons of Suddenly Susan, the NBC sitcom? There were. This is the one with Brooke Shields. He came on in season 4, and that's what we're going to be talking about. It's season 4, episode 1, The New Gate. It is on Prime Video, not streaming. You do have to pay for it. Do I recommend that? I don't know. I haven't watched it yet. We'll see. For now, if you want to hear us talk about that and the previous 144 bonus episodes, a gross, woo! As Sarah noted in our last episode. You can join us at any level at againwiththispodcast.com/club. And if you join at the $5 level or up, you can also get the monthly Again With Them episodes where we talk about 90210OMG in detail. The May edition is coming up soon. So now's a good time to join if that's the kind of thing that you're into. Again, that's againwiththispodcast.com/club. All right. Let's talk about this stupidly named episode. A Christine Runs Through It. It's not even a pun. Starting with our C-plot, the Mancinis continue to bore, but at least they're also irritating Coop enough to get loose-lipped with Peter. Specifically, we mean Michael and Megan Mancini. Jennifer is, you know, fine. The first time that we see Megan and Michael is like 3/4 of the way through the episode, having dinner at Kyle's. Michael thanks Megan for convincing Peter to give him an interview for an ER staff job at the hospital. She exposits that his clinic's in the toilet, RIP his uncle's retirement money, I guess. I feel like he's just going to drift away from it and we're never going to hear about it again, except for this guy who I hope comes to murder him. Anyway, this is when Coop walks in and sees them and brushes past Taylor to go make a scene because he thought Megan was helping Michael with his resume. And they finished early and Megan thought Coop had a meeting. Well, it got canceled. He's just winding up for a whole, I still want to know why this is happening, rant when Megan wearily asks him to join them, but he'd rather go upstairs and drink instead. Same. I don't even drink, and yet I would.
I was going to say, this is what it's come to.
This is what's going to drive me to it. Up there, we get this. Clip 2.
Every time I run into you in a bar, I end up drinking too much. Why is that?
Because when the booze peels away the utter contempt we have for one another, we're basically bookends.
Oh, that's a frightening thought.
Well, think about it. We have the same taste in women and booze. And if we had the choice between poverty or the high life, well, we both agree there'd be no choice, right?
Wrong. Some things in life have more value than dollars and cents.
Really? Like what?
Like love.
Coming from a man who married for money.
You guys, I'm sorry, but last call was a half an hour ago, and I want to go home, so... sink your drinks.
You don't know how much I love Megan. I'll tell you how much. $10 million worth, that's how much.
$10 million.
Yep. Because according to old man Sterling's will, if I remarry Lexi within a year, that's how much I'd inherit. Giving it all up for love.
You're saying you're not even tempted by the idea?
Are you kidding me? For $10 million, wouldn't you be? But look, see, that's why I'm telling you this. Because if you somehow got back together with Lexi, then that would just like KO the temptation. So what do you say, Pete? Help out your partner, your friend?
I'm not answer that.
I don't either. Lexi dumped him. Right. Is A.
Uh-huh.
B. Remember how we were saying last time that nobody says mum's the word except in scripts?
Uh-huh.
Nobody calls them the old man.
No.
Or, you know, psychiatrists, head shrinkers, except uh-huh. in scripts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, did we forget that Lexi was like, you killed him and tried to, you know, provoke him, and I don't ever want to talk to you again? Like, mm-hmm. Why does Peter have to get back together with her to do Coop a solid?
Right.
Like, he can't.
Yeah.
I will say, Lyndon Ashby is a pretty good drunk actor, so mm-hmm. highlight?
Yeah. It does seem like, other than the fact that, you know, the economy of characters rule means there can't be one, but it feels like it would be easier for Coop to just find a gigolo or whatever and be yeah. like, you go fuck her. Like,
yeah,
get a reference from Megan, you know? She probably knows someone, just saying.
Yeah, or what's her nuts? The stripper?
Oh, oh my God, she was only on like less than 10
Amber?
Episodes. Amber?
I think yeah, that's right. Sure.
Anyway,
yeah,
back to the scene. Coop's like, shouldn't be that hard a decision unless it's really over for you two. And Peter grunts that it's not, even though they did not interact in the last episode at all. So Coop better not just go buy that Ferrari yet. And the next day, Lexi is drooping alone in Coop's office at the practice when Peter, turning his seduction powers to 11, says Coop had to take a call and asked Peter to bring her coffee. And Lexi looks like she is about to explode out of her pants when Peter gets her order right. And then stares at her lips as he says he misses her. She misses him too. That's all it takes for him to lunge at her face and she's into it, which, like, was he just not trying before? Because that seemed really easy.
Yeah. I mean, also mutual coffee breath. Like, I know they were living yeah. together before and they would be used to that, but like, I don't know. Give her a Listerine strip, maybe. Mm-hmm. Be a gent.
Perhaps. Well, that's all
also,
we have
who
to
cares?
Deal with
it's
this
Lexi.
Week. Right. Moving on to our B plot. Sam and Billy continue falling apart. The day after we last saw Sam, we get this as she busts into Jennifer's place first thing in the morning. Again, someone just had like a macro and they just kept dropping it into their final draft. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she says this, clip 3.
I'm now a full-blown adulteress.
Well, technically you were the first time you fucked Jeff, but okay, I guess you're just catching people up.
Do you think full-blown means something it doesn't?
Right.
Does it refer to something specific?
Perhaps.
Whereas, like, you were just a half-blown adulteress when it was only P and V, but once you went down on him, now you're a full-blown adulteress? I don't understand.
Before also, she was a full-handed adulteress, and now, anyway. I'm not sorry. I was about to say sorry. I'm not. Jennifer hopefully says...
No, you shouldn't be either. Fuck this. Something has got to liven up this plot, and if it's these jokes, so be it.
Yeah. Jennifer says it sounds like Sam made her decision, but Sam claims she still loves Billy with all her heart. She just has these carnal urges she can't control. Not for Billy. Speaking of whom, that's when Billy lets himself in and is clearly about to start pouring his heart out to Jennifer about their tryst. So, clip 4.
Can I come in? We gotta talk.
Hey, Billy. Guess who's here?
Sam.
What do you need to talk to Jennifer about?
You. Yeah, I just wanted to know if she'd seen you. Wanted to know if you wanted a carpool.
Oh, no. I have to go to the mall after work. Remember?
No, I don't. Oh, it must have slipped my mind. Well, I gotta go to work. See you guys.
I should be leaving too.
You guys have a good day.
Get out of my life. I'm sick of both of you.
You deserve better than this, both actor and character.
It's true. I will say, though, there's a lot of right faces by Sam and Billy in the scene that you can see in the visual aids.
Because they hate each other.
It's true. And then I don't know what happened, because the next time we see Sam, she's in Jeff's bed, very distractedly kissing him. I guess he is the mall. But she has to get home before Billy.
He is the mall.
Perfect. Jeff wants to talk, but there's nothing to discuss. They're great in bed, and it's getting easier to lie to Billy. And right now, she has to shower. And the next morning, Billy is pulling a harried Sam to a staff meeting at the agency when Jeff calls, and with Billy standing a foot away from Sam, suggests they go away to San Diego. As Sam covers to Billy that it's the VP at her dog food client, Jeff says he can't be the other man in her life, which, I don't know, man, you should have thought of that. She was married the entire time you knew her, but fine. Sam asks Billy to cover for her while she finishes her call, and after he snits off, she tells Jeff she wants to go, but she doesn't know what she would say to Billy. I don't know, say you're going to another mall that's far away.
The mall at Palm Springs.
Going to the mall at Short Hills. You know, you should. It's a good mall.
It is. You can walk. It's great.
The next day at Jennifer's, clip five.
These crack of the dawn visits are getting to be a drag.
Yeah, for us as well, because we've seen it 50 times. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Sam tells Jennifer about the San Diego trip. Jennifer resumes, not that subtly, pushing Sam towards Jeff. He probably feels bad about his career. It's just one night in the lifetime with Billy, etc. And then Sam reminds us all that Coop and Jennifer are still working together at fucking Glove Co. So Jennifer, as an agency client, could make up a reason for that account to send Sam to San Diego. And Jennifer's all about it. So thank you, Glove Co., for still existing, I guess. Later at the office, Billy calls Sam in to give her a surprise. It's a dress for the Gala Committee Awards dinner tomorrow night. Not the Gala Committee we know.
No.
Furthermore, here's who I don't want picking out clothes for me, Billy.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to see Sam try it on and find out it was like 50 sizes too big, like all of his shirts. But,
no, they're just like 14. Fuck you.
But oh no, Sam just heard she has to go to San Diego tomorrow and meet the Glove Co. distributor. Billy says the dinner's more important. The award is for family values, and Sam is his family, which is how you can tell it's really not the Gala Committee that we know. But anyway, clip six.
What else can I say besides business before pleasure?
Your job comes before our marriage?
You know it doesn't.
You're right, I'm sorry. I'll talk to Amanda. Maybe she can get somebody else to go to San Diego.
Oh, it's my artwork. It's my campaign. Why don't you take Jennifer?
Jennifer? Why would I take her?
Well, why not? I mean, she doesn't have anybody in her life right now, and she's a good friend of mine. I don't see any harm in it. Why don't you just call her?
All right, I'll think about it.
She doesn't have anybody in her life right now is so rude. Like, single people have people in their lives. Shut up.
Yeah. Also, they have TV in their lives. I'd rather stay in and watch whatever was on that night than go out with Billy.
Suddenly Susan, perhaps.
Okay, maybe I'd go out with Billy.
Sam thanks Billy for the dress and takes it with her, so I guess we know who's going to enjoy seeing her in it, because it's not going to be Billy. And she goes straight to her desk to call Jennifer and beg her to go to the dinner with Billy. And so when Billy goes to the jazz club that night to invite Jennifer to the dinner, she readily agrees. Excuse me, I meant to say jazz club. And the next day, I've been really lightening up on the pronunciations lately. We all know. When I say it, I mean jazz club.
They also haven't been there that much lately because all this scheming is happening near train tracks.
Thank God.
Near the train tracks.
The train tracks. The next day, we join Sam and Jeff in the shower at the waterfront in San Diego. For the next 24 hours, she's not going to do anything alone, and she's into that until Jeff says he loves her. And since he can't see her face fall at that part, he just charges ahead, telling her to move in with him and leave Billy. But if she's working up to ending it, she should tell her jaw, because it sure unhinges to make room for Jeff's tongue right after that. And then we get more evidence for Sarah's "they simply do not want to pay extras" thesis as we rejoin Billy and Jennifer on their way out of the dinner, like outside of the hotel, having, we are told, danced up a storm. It's been a long time since Jennifer went out with a winner, which is literally true this particular night. The agency won three awards.
Unbroken streak there.
Yes. Only Jennifer was there to share it with Billy. He doesn't care about Amanda skipping it, but Sam could have changed her plans. He's just not a priority to Sam these days. And Jennifer smooches Billy on the cheek and says she's glad she could be there for him. And clip 7.
I don't want this evening to end.
Ugh, the baby voice. Honestly.
Yeah. Ugh. Also, that's like, try investing it with some feeling instead of using the baby voice, but it's Billy. I guess that's too much to ask.
It's true. Somehow, said baby voice does not make Jennifer's crotch close up, and she says the night doesn't have to end, noting they're at a hotel, which may have a room available, and then they're in one, frantically going at it for much longer than any of us needed to see, honestly, considering it's Billy.
I mean, also, though, in fairness, Sam and Jeff bone zone scenes go on for much too long.
That is true, but I find Jeff hotter than Billy.
Yeah, so for sure. But, like, the boredom levels are kind of consistent to both.
And true.
It's like, we get it. They're going to, unless you're actually going to show us some dong.
Yeah.
Cut.
Yeah. Finally, we have our A plot. Even post-mortem, Christine still affects events. We pick back up with Taylor and Nick where we left off, hunched over Christine's corpse in a church parking lot, trying to figure out what to do. Panicking, Taylor says Nick's fingerprints are all over the body, which I have watched a lot of crime shows. Skin is generally not used as a surface from which anyone tries to lift prints. For obvious reasons, I feel.
Yeah. Clothing, anyway. Same.
Like, your skin is constantly producing, like, oil and sweat. Like, are his fingerprints all over her body? I'm not sure they are, but it doesn't matter because a plan has come to Nick, and phase one is for Taylor to do what he says, and phase two is for him to chuck Christine into the back of Taylor's SUV. And we cut straight from here to the new McBrides checking into the honeymoon suite at some hotel, which he has booked for that night and on their anniversary forever, basically.
The clerk,
right. Also, like, no, you haven't. You've checked, you've reserved it for however long you're going to have this credit card. So until October 2000, that's it. Anyway, the clerk says they've had a late checkout, so the room isn't ready yet. And Amanda pouts to Kyle that she's ready now, but Kyle works in hospitality, and he rolls with it, heading off to the restaurant with her. And Amanda says he didn't have to spring for the honeymoon suite. Any room would do. And Kyle's basically like, please remain horny for 30 more minutes, because this was all a ruse. He also reserved the dining room and got the jazz club house band to play right next to their table. Oh, great. That's lovely.
Everyone looks miserable. Like,
they really
the musicians
do.
Are like, ew. Even Heather Locklear is like, hey. Yeah. I could be projecting. I don't think so. I think this is a horrible idea.
Correct. Back to Taylor and Nick in the car. Taylor points out Christine's rental car, and then it's plan o'clock, clip 8.
Let's go over this one more time.
Okay, I'm going to drive my car to the train tracks where Kyle rescued Christine, and you're going to follow in her car.
Right.
Wait, I can't drive with a car with a body in it, because if the cops pull me over, I'm going to lose it. Okay.
I can't drive with a car with a body? Give a bitch another take. That's not the line.
Although, I didn't mind that.
Yeah.
This time, because, like, she's freaking out, and that was convincing.
True. All
stammering, right. I think.
Okay, I'll go with you.
Am I defending this dialogue? What's happening to me?
I don't know. Let's move on. Clip 9.
Okay, okay. You can drive Christine's car. I'll take yours. Meet in Glendale. Okay. Go. Go.
Driving. Then Peter calls Taylor on her flip phone looking for Kyle. She tells him to leave Kyle and Amanda alone because has Taylor seen Christine? Then Peter wants to know. Breathlessly, Taylor claims she heard Christine went back to New Mexico and then pretends she's losing the call and hangs up. And then Kyle's carrying Amanda over the threshold into the honeymoon suite. But before she can, as promised, rip his clothes off, a bellman delivers a message to Amanda, which reads, "Amanda, I do have the guts. Catching that train tonight. Thanks for the shove, Christine." Don't know when Nick presumably dictated that one, but fine. Amanda lies to Kyle when he asks that it was a message from the office, and then she delays a little longer, telling Kyle she has some sensational lingerie to change into and he should go take a shower. Wow, neg him. Why don't you? So then she goes back down to the lobby. By the way, and you can see this in the visual aids, speaking of the terrible wardrobe that Sarah mentioned in our last podcast, she's wearing this big, like, white shawl cape thing over her dress for no reason, and she clearly hates it. She keeps futzing with it. It's like so distracting.
It's like a poncho, but like silk polyester, and it has no purpose.
Right.
There's like the pearl choker. It's all just really mumsy, and I don't get it. And I feel like she's probably in a sort of bandage-esque dress with like a rose print on it underneath, mm-hmm. which would be super cute. Like, just show us the dress, but maybe she was feeling self-conscious about post-baby profile. I don't know.
Sure, very possible.
That was not the answer.
No, like Heather Locklear, I would think, would be at the level where she could be like, can I have like a cardigan or a jacket or something? Because like she is truly just fussing with it so much that it's distracting. And you know, it's possible that she was self-conscious, but we've seen her in a skin-tight shirt and pants in New Mexico.
That's
like,
true.
A few weeks and in ago, that, she like, looked great. Like,
disgusting,
she looked the same as always.
Baby poo-colored crochet suit that was like, I mean, the shape-wise, it was fine. Just the color was like, what are we doing?
Exactly. Anyway, she grabs the phone on the concierge desk and calls 911. Up in the room, Peter calls Kyle to say Christine escaped from the hospital, which not the right word if, as Peter told her in the last episode, her commitment was voluntary, but okay. And then we're at the train tracks. Taylor gets into the SUV with Nick. The next train is 25 minutes away. Kyle comes down to the lobby, sees Amanda on the phone, hears the end of her directions to the dispatcher, and when Kyle directly asks her where Christine is, Amanda hangs up and admits that she lied before because she didn't want Christine to wreck their wedding night. And then the train is coming. Taylor screws up her courage and then, for no reason, gets out of the SUV to supervise as Nick lays Christine's body on the tracks. Elsewhere, Kyle and Amanda speed to the tracks. Seeing Amanda's also worried, Kyle takes her hand. And then Nick smooths Christine's hair and then goes back to Taylor's car. Taylor can't believe Christine is dead. She never meant this to happen. And Nick is just like, let's go. People are going to be here. And the engineer can see something on the tracks and he tries to brake, but clip 10. God, the smushing.
Dude. Just sounds like a bunch of like chunks of I don't even know what, like pasta sauce hitting a windshield. It's very, very bad.
Yes.
Very bad.
Like mashing strawberries in a bowl with like a potato masher, because it's not a smoothie. Mm-hmm. It's not like a blender. It's just anyway.
Awful.
Having parked a safe distance away, Taylor and Nick both see as Kyle arrives too late and see what's left of the body. And Kyle looks back at Amanda in horror. And Amanda says this, clip 11.
She did.
Yeah, she did. Or did she? We know she didn't. But it seems like she did. And this is honestly a decent way to get out of their problems, I have to say, for Nick and Taylor. Yeah. Congratulations to them for coming up with it that quickly. You're probably wondering what kind of sub music is going to usher us into the ongoing story of a woman smushed on train tracks. Well, wonder no more. Clip 12.
locked inside my empty room, just waiting for your call. Going up from staring to the wall. So maybe it's a game you play for you to make me crawl, but nothing seems to change for me at all.
Inappropriate.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Also, so on the nose, it is a nose.
It's true. This is where we see in the credits Dave Grusin is supposed to be a special musical guest. We sure do not see him. He did not make the cut, but congratulations to him.
Thank you for not getting the rights to that.
Right. After the B-roll, it's morning at the tracks, which are now swarming with cops and other first responders, and an unnamed detective tells Kyle it seems to have been suicide. This is the second of three cops Frank DiPaolo will play on Melrose Place, so spoiler, get excited about seeing him again in the Season 7 Christmas episode! Amanda wearily sits back in the passenger seat of Kyle's car. He trudges back and confronts her about her lie. She admits she's been lying to him a lot lately, like she didn't tell him about the other letter that Christine intended Amanda to read about sleeping with Kyle, which she still doesn't believe happened. And she says she basically dared Christine to kill herself or Amanda would. And Kyle says he's just as guilty for thinking keeping Christine in L.A. would cure her depression. I'm not sure that's on the same level as what Amanda did, but whatever. They agree to leave it there and go home. Over to Christine's motel room, Nick rifles through all her stuff. And given that she was only there for like 2 days, she really moved in. Shit is everywhere. Like,
yeah,
she might have been depressed for real based on the state of this room. Like, no offense, but it's a mess. And
it's also kind of a lot of nail polish for a relatively short-term scheme trip.
Yes. Yeah, just go to a nail shop. Get a manicure. It's like, it's the 90s.
You're out of
what
town.
Was it, like $7? My God. Anyway, Nick tells Taylor to help him, but Taylor's still freaked out that Christine was alive 24 hours ago, and now she isn't. Clip 13.
Now, it would be one thing if she was suicidal, but she was a damn imposter. I mean, we did this to her. She was like a lamb being led to slaughter.
Will you chill? I am trying to keep Kyle and the cops off our back here.
What, by getting rid of everything that connects us to her?
Yeah.
Is it that easy for you, Nick? To just throw out some papers and her clothes and that's the end of it? Because I can't stop seeing her face. The fear. Her struggling to get away from us, to get to Kyle. And you know what? I can't do this anymore. I'm out of here.
You ain't going anywhere at all.
Doll now.
Sweet cheeks.
Also, I don't know why Taylor's like, why are you trying to like get rid of anything that ties her to us? Like, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Duh. Anyway.
That's the yeah. And the line readings are just very, I feel like Rinna was not directed at all. Because she's still in like, I don't know, noir parody mode, and it does not work.
Taylor starts to say she's never done anything as bad as murder before, but Nick gets in her face to say she's in it up to her neck, so she better start participating in the cover-up, and she meekly plays along. And at Amanda's place, the newlyweds are toasting to their life together when Taylor appears at the door, claiming she just heard about Christine. Amanda stalks off, and Taylor claims she didn't want to upset her. She's sincerely and genuinely concerned about them, and Kyle's like, thanks, get lost. And then has to do damage control with Amanda, claiming that was just Taylor being Taylor. But Amanda can't think about this anymore and goes to bed. And the next morning, Kyle goes to the condo to make a very weird pitch. Clip 14.
What makes you think that I can get through to Amanda?
Because she won't listen to me. I mean, she's almost irrational. She thinks that she is responsible for Christine's death. No, come on. Christine was a walking time bomb. I mean, you had her on suicide watch, for God's sakes.
Well, I actually thought she was doing better. She seemed more focused, like she'd made some decisions. She knew what she wanted to do with her life. And Amanda came to see her.
And what?
Well, she basically crushed her spirit.
There's nothing that you or I can do for Christine anymore. Tell me you'll talk to Amanda.
Kyle.
Would you at least lie to her then? Hell, it was your idea to go ahead with this wedding. thought you gave a damn about us.
I do.
Then?
All right, I'll call her. I'll see what I can do.
Thanks.
What? I mean, I agree that Amanda's blaming herself, and I understand why, but, like, there are other people in her life. This does not have to be Peter, particularly given that in the last episode, the conversation you had was, are you trying to get back together with Amanda? Like, find someone else to talk to ask Sam.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Billy, like, I know it's Billy. And also, it's not a lie. It was his idea for them to get married right away. So check the show Bible.
Yeah. There anyway, they didn't. And later, no. Peter runs into Amanda at the hospital. He assumes she's responding to his messages, but she's there to see Christine. And Peter basically says, there's nothing left to see, but Amanda just wants to make peace with her. And Peter snitches on Kyle's visit earlier and tells Amanda to stop blaming herself because she just made a mistake. But Amanda knows who she is and what she did and will make sure to tell Kyle that Peter follows orders well. Okay, rude. Over to Nick's gross motel room where Taylor interrupts his makeshift arm day sesh to tell him about the latest off-screen drama. Specifically, he's pulled a drawer out of the dresser and has, like, his ankles crossed on it while he does, I don't know, what do you call those? Back push-ups?
Reverse push-ups? Lifts?
Yeah, whatever. He's working it. I'm not mad about it.
No, me neither. Very cool hand, Luke, into it.
True. Clip 15.
Nick, a detective came to the restaurant asking me all kinds of questions about Christine. Where we met, how close we were, and did I know she was still in L.A.?
So what? All you had to do is tell me you don't know squat.
They know, Nick. The cops know. What are you doing?
Now I'm just screwed up town.
Oh, you're not going to desert me. Not that I wouldn't be sorry to see you go, but I am not going to be left holding the bag.
The bag is buried, and a girl I cared about is dead, and I can't stand to look at your face anymore.
But you said we were in this together, and that I was supposed to stop with my guilt, which I am trying to do, but Nick, I've got this girl's blood on my hands. My God, I don't even know her real name.
Tiffany Hart, 26 next month. She was a chorus girl in Vegas when we met, and off the strip joint. Face got all screwed up in his car wreck, which goes to prove I should never drink and drive.
Oh, my God, I didn't know.
Yeah. I owed her. Figured this was a way I could make up for some of the pain.
No, I can't listen to this anymore. We owe this to her. We have to go to the cops and confess.
I told you before to keep your trap shut. Otherwise, I'll have one more loose end to tie up. And trust me, I will not hesitate to do it.
Do it. Do it. She's whiny and annoying. None of her schemes work. We're over it. Just do it.
But at least now we have a name. So RIP Tiffany Hart. Yeah. It sure was handy that Nick happened to meet Christine's identical cousin in Las Vegas and ruin her life before ruining it all the way, basically. Really implausible, but now it's over. Moving on, back to Amanda's, where Kyle is hilariously delivering their fully plated dinners to the table, as he says, clip 16.
Our marriage is not cursed. Why would you even think that?
Because it's true. Christine tried to kill herself the first time we were going to get married, and then the second time.
You know, what do you say we declare a moratorium on the Christine conversations?
You loved her, and now she's dead, and you don't want to talk about it.
I don't know how to get through to you.
Why don't you start by telling me the truth? You haven't said one honest or true feeling since she died.
Okay, you know what? Yeah, I do. I think that you are partially responsible for Christine's suicide. If you would have been honest with me, shown me that letter, not gone to the damn hospital, maybe she would be alive. But she's not. And you and I are married, and we can get through this thing.
I don't think so. Christine is a bigger problem for us dead than she ever was alive.
Amanda, please.
No, I don't want to be touched. What I want is to be left alone.
You're being ridiculous.
All the more reason for you to sleep in your own apartment tonight.
Okay, well, I guess that's why you kept it. But yeah, it does seem like your marriage is cursed. Sorry, bro.
Yeah, it does. Get it annulled.
Yeah, please. The next day, Taylor finds Kyle day drinking at the jazz club. He declines her offer to cover for him for a few days so he can go on his honeymoon, because that won't bring Christine back or fix his marriage. Clip 17.
Listen, Kyle, if you're blaming yourself, you should stop, because you did everything humanly possible to help Christine get her life back on track. I didn't mean that kind of track.
Guys.
Calling it out doesn't erase the fact that you did it.
No.
I mean, wrote the line.
Just rewrite the line. Oh,
yeah. God. So then Kyle admits he does blame Amanda, which what was that trip to Peter's for then? But Taylor doesn't think he should. Kyle didn't really know Christine inside. Like, Kyle thought Nick was his best friend and Nick turned out to be a rat. And Kyle is suspicious that she is bringing Nick up out of the blue, and she babbles that she's just trying to be there for Kyle. And later, Taylor has come home to change out of a sauce-stained white sweater. Can relate to find Nick sitting in her living room. Speaking of which, this is who's now living in Jake's old apartment, which I had forgotten last time we recorded. That's who is on that ground floor place. We still don't know who's living in the apartment formerly last occupied by Craig and, before she died, Sydney.
Oh, yeah, Craig.
Remember Craig?
Yeah.
4 episodes ago?
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Taylor's little breakdown was just a temporary lapse. The old, completely selfish Taylor is back, and Nick has nothing to worry about. And Nick has just started kissing on her, which she did not invite, when Kyle knocks on the door. Nick goes to sneak out of the bathroom window, and then Kyle comes in and asks what Taylor meant when she said he never really knew Christine. She says just that people change, etc., and he says, clip 18.
No, what you said, I'm going to quote you here. You said, I didn't really know Christine, just like I didn't really know Nick, who turned out to be a rat.
Well, I don't know what I meant. I was trying to make you feel better, and obviously I failed.
You know, if you're lying to me, I will find out.
Come on, Kyle. I would never keep anything from you. You know that.
Right. Discussion's not over.
Also, you won't find out, by the way.
Yeah.
You're done.
You're really stupid. She's obviously lying, and you're just going to be like, okay, well, bye.
Right. Good.
Okay, cool.
And then I guess we're supposed to know Nick is gone and not, like, frogging with a pH in the walls at Taylor's apartment, because when Taylor goes to the bathroom and closes the window, he left open. I guess she doesn't know how much of that he heard before he left. And that night, Taylor's about to lock up at Kyle's when she comes out of the kitchen to see Nick helping himself to the McBride whiskey. He knows they're alone and hands her one last toast before he leaves town. And she's about to down hers, but he stops her. Clip 19.
To the best partner in crime a guy ever had. Gonna miss you, Taylor.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss you too, Nick. You don't have to do that. That's why we've got a dishwasher.
It's wiping down the shot glass.
I don't mind.
In the bottle.
What are you, a clean freak all of a sudden?
Yeah. I like my life clean and neat.
Nick?
Figured I'd make it look like a robbery.
Ooh, finally Taylor gets what's happening and runs. Nick chases her through to the kitchen, where she grabs a knife, and they struggle. He throws her against the wall, knocking her out. That's when Michael comes in, calling her name, and that he thinks he left his resume on the table, and he hears glass clattering as Nick runs away down the alley. Michael goes to investigate when Taylor continues not answering and finds her where Nick left her, clip 20.
Damn. Taylor, what the hell happened?
Oh, threw me against the wall and left me for dead.
Oh,
my head.
Okay. Good concussion acting.
I am in a period where I have had a migraine every day for about 3 weeks, except for two. And my hair is like, that's me every morning.
Oof.
I'm
sorry.
Thank you.
This can't be helping.
Well, it's not the only time in the episode a lady could have used another crack at the line, in my opinion, but whatever. Michael calls 911. She doesn't want to go to the hospital because they'll want to know why Nick tried to kill her, and Kyle can't find out. So Michael takes her to the clinic, which is where she wakes up the next morning to Michael telling her she has a concussion. Her makeup is still perfect, by the way, which you can see in the visual aids.
Mm-hmm.
And
the head bandage looks like a fashion headband.
It does.
It's fine.
It looks like she's going to play pickleball.
Yep.
So Michael has to go to a meeting, so he tells Taylor to stay there and take it easy, which no instructions on falling asleep, which I always thought was the main thing you have to do when you have a concussion, but I only got that from TV and movies, so that could be totally wrong. When Michael starts to leave, Taylor panics and tries to get up, saying she has to get out of town, but Michael pushes her back down, and she yelps that he doesn't understand. Distractedly and not really seeming like he cares, because he doesn't, Michael says she should explain then, and I guess she's so out of it that she does? Clip 21.
I was all so innocent at first, you know, I was just trying to break Amanda and Kyle up.
Again?
Love that.
So good. Anyway, she tells him the rest of the story that we already know. His face following this soap opera plot is very funny, and they keep the camera on him for a while, so they know and they appreciate it, and so do I, seeing the visual aids. Taylor begs Michael to get her out of town. He relents because he knows what it's like to be in over your head. Michael believes Nick will look for her at the hospital ER, and he can handle Nick there, but she's going to owe him. And when we see Michael next, he's being paged to talk to Nick about his patient, Taylor. Nick is killing time waiting for Michael by hitting on a woman in scrubs, classy to the spoiler last. Michael already briefed the nurse on the desk that if someone came in looking for Taylor, she should pretend Taylor had been admitted. So Michael heads over to Nick and clip 22.
Excuse me. Excuse me, I'm Dr. Mancini. I treated Taylor McBride last night. Thank you.
Thanks.
Are you a friend or a relative?
Yeah, I'm an old friend of the family's. So how's she doing?
Well, I'm afraid I have some bad news. Mrs. McBride didn't make it.
She's dead?
Cause of death was an intracerebral hemorrhage. I guess someone broke into the restaurant and she put up a fight. But there were no fingerprints or witnesses, so they'll never catch the guy. Is there anything I can do?
No. No, Doc, you've been great. And thanks for cushioning the blow. Taylor was one of a kind.
And that's a series wrap on Scott Plank.
When I looked
it up to confirm that that was his last episode, Sarah, literally his very next credit after this on IMDb is a Charmed from the Shannon Doherty episode, also the Alyssa Milano episode because she was in it the whole time. But his episode also stars Sean Christian, Donna's beach volleyball trick from like the post-college years.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So
that douche. Oh, yeah.
Saying,
we're on it.
May come up in a future Patriot episode. Who's to say? And then we're back at Christine's motel as the manager lets Kyle into her room, which no one has cleared out yet. Clip 23.
Never expected somebody so young to kick the bucket, but I guess everybody's got their demons, right?
Guys, phrasing, really.
Kick the bucket. My
kick
God.
The bucket. Oh, I guess everybody got their demons, right? Sweet cheeks.
Oh,
guys. I hope this is mostly over, but it isn't because Amanda's got her demons now that we have to deal with for the rest of the season. But oh my God, the freezing. Brutal.
Sigh. The manager asks what Kyle is looking for exactly, and he says, an answer. And by the tracks, Amanda is doing the same thing, blinking away tears, and that's it. For a Christine runs through it, and also for Christine / Tiffany herself. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. I mean, I hate to say it because he's a bad man, but Nick, I mean, he's getting away clean.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I'm comfortable with Nick or Lexi. She got coffee the way she likes it and to make out with Peter, which is the way many of us like it. So I guess her, and she gets so few wins because she's so boring and not good at acting. So let's give her this one. Why not?
Fair. Least valuable player.
The conductor.
Who was that?
The conductor.
Oh, the conductor.
I mean, everyone is pretty terrible. And of course, it's not the conductor's fault. I'm going to say... Kyle.
Yeah.
Just for the jazz honeymoon thing. Sorry.
God, yes. Okay, I'm going to say the band who agreed to this. And I certainly hope they were paid, but I just have a feeling they weren't.
Yeah. Demand triple overtime or get the fuck out. Next time and again with this. Amanda can't move on. Peter wants Lexi to move in, and Coop tries to move the ball with Megan by threatening a move to Philadelphia. Second prize is 2 coops in Philadelphia. You can visit the city of brotherly ugh that is our visual aids anytime you like. They're at againwiththispodcast.com, and they're available for every episode of this here podcast. We're on Twitter at AWT90210. You can email us, hello@againwiththispodcast.com. You can call us, or as Billy would say, call us, 210-920-4699. And you'll get extra episodes and access to our Discord at againwiththispodcast.com/club. I'm Crack of the Dawn, Sarah D. Buntig, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is crime scene stager Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And David T. Cole's marriage is not cursed. Talk to you next time.
Oh, who wrote this?